Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back. Hour number two of our show as we roll another hour toward game day, Kentucky, Florida. You're going to hear that one right here on 630 WLAP. And one of the guys who will be covering the game, he's been a part of the UK beat for a few years now, is on our celebrity hotline, Mr. Gary Graves of the Associated Press. How are you, young man?
I'm doing just fine, Dick. How are you?
I'm well. And before we go any further, because we always run out of time, our beloved Green Bay Packers, how much did you love what you saw the other night against the Niners?
I'm still amazed. I was watching a replay of that, and I'm still trying to figure out how did he get that team in position. I mean, it's just kind of crazy, you know. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember Elway.
Oh, yeah.
I guess young Brady and all that, but it's like that was impressive. That was even for him, that was impressive.
I was going to say, I had to admit, 37 seconds, no timeouts, and I'm thinking, I think we may have run out of luck here. But, yeah, we could go all night on that. So let us shift back to the team we cover, and that's the Florida Gators. Peter Burns of the SEC Network wondered on Twitter, is this the biggest game at Kentucky in 35 years? It's one of them, but in 16 and 18, if Kentucky beats Georgia, It holds the trump card when it comes to going to Atlanta. That's not quite the case here, Gary, but just how big is this opportunity for the Wildcats?
Well, I think it might be probably their biggest game. It might even be bigger than the 2018 win over Florida, from the standpoint that beating them then was a matter of proving that they can contend. But now the target has become Georgia. And, you know, to beat Georgia, you still first have to get past Florida.
Yeah.
And I think if they win this game, then I think they need to be taken, you know, legitimately. They need to be considered for real in terms of how they go after Georgia. Because, I don't think that you can get to that next level without getting past Florida again. And really, when you have a chance at home, you have to take care of it much better than they did like 2 years ago, you know, letting that game slip away.
Yeah.
I think that still kind of sticks in the craw of many of the veterans that, you know, they know that they let one slip away. I mean, I think that they have a point to prove, and it's big in that regard.
And Billy and I have spent the last 2.5 shows stipulating to the fact that you can't turn it over, period. If you do that against Florida, you got no shot. So let's assume the turnovers are even in this game. What do you see as the keys for the Wildcats? You got to take care of the ball. We know that. But beyond that, how do you win this game?
I think you have to concentrate on really just keeping the game very compact. Just keep moving the chains. If it opens up a little bit, then you can take your deep shots. But the way that they've been using Smoke and C-Rod running the ball, you know, to get gains, use your tight ends. You know, it doesn't have to be necessarily a 30-yard strike.
Yeah.
Of course, the question with that is, will Levis really deliver those kind of balls to keep the chains moving? Because we all know he can hit the deep balls. We know, you know, he's got speedy receivers that, you know, can run after the catch. But, you know, he's got to hit those short, you know, intermediate routes to really just sustain drives and move the ball down the field. I think that's the key to beating Florida. Offensively, that is.
Gary, what have you made of the changes that the program as a whole has undergone on the offensive side of the ball from Eddie Grant to Liam Cohen? Do you feel like this offense is very different and they wouldn't have had success even if they would have had guys like Wandell on the team last year and Will Levis?
Yeah, I mean, I think the system has made probably the biggest difference because, you know, you've, I think you got the kind of guys that can execute that system, and in that you have Wandale, you know, who's a speedy guy. For a guy his size, he's very, very uncanny in terms of how he breaks free of defenders. I mean, it's like, you know, he's fighting guys off, but, you know, somehow he always manages to be at least a few yards in front of them. And that's the kind of guy that this offense is needed. And in a sense, that's kind of opened up things for Josh Ali to get his opportunities too. And, you know, as all three of us have seen over the years, the biggest problem is that they just have not had that, you know, receiving playmaker that, you know, that can get free, other than, say, maybe a Lynn Bowden here and there. But they just haven't had that kind of receiver that can be a playmaker that can separate from defenders and, you know, and get those big gains.
Gary, I know you remember the name Beasley Reese, pro football player. He is now working TV in Philadelphia. He is one of the rare guys who has played both wide receiver and defensive back in the National Football League. And many years ago, I was covering the Belmont, and I was talking to him there. And my son was playing wide receiver in high school, and he was having a terrible time getting off the line of scrimmage. And so I put him on the phone with Beasley Reese. I said, here's an NFL veteran who knows both sides of the line of scrimmage. And he told him, he said, just remember this. It's hand-to-hand combat. At the line of scrimmage with a wide receiver and a D-back, it's hand-to-hand combat. And you were talking about Wandale, and I flashed on that because he's not the biggest guy, but isn't it amazing that – and part of it too, Gary, is Van Hiles pointed out – he's in the slot, so they can't really jam him. But his ability to be behind the defense within a few strides is uncanny, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it is. And even in the slot, there are a couple of plays where, you know, where somebody came up and tried to jam him, and it's like, yeah. And again, like you said, it's hand to hand combat, and you figure just as you figure he's not going to be an option. He breaks free, and Levis hits him, and I want to say it was probably the opener when I saw that, and I'm thinking, how in the world did that guy get free? Because I mean, he was getting mugged, you know, with them in those 5 yards, and then all of a sudden he's open, you know, for like a pass across the middle.
Gary, with Oklahoma and Texas making the move over to the SEC, if I'm a prospect looking to go into college, am I doing a disservice to myself if I don't join an SEC team? I mean, with 65 selections in the NFL draft last year, it feels like if I'm not in the SEC, I'm already behind the eight ball.
I was going to say, that's a trick question, right? I mean, if you really want to talk about a monopoly that the SEC could have when they join, as if they don't have it already, I mean – you know, with all due respect to all the other Power Five conferences, but it's just almost unfair. It seems like, I mean, no matter where you go, I could even say that if you're like that 4-star or 3-star guy, look, even if you're Vanderbilt, I still feel like you can probably get talent just because those two teams come on board just for the chance to face them. You might not be able to start at any other SEC school, but, you know, what is that term? A rising tide lifts all boats. And, you know, at first I was skeptical of it, but I just think, my goodness, you know, it's going to be a boon in terms of recruiting for every team in this league.
Gary, I don't know how much time you've had to digest this or react to this at all, but apparently earlier today the National Labor Relations Board ruled that certain players at academic institutions are employees under the National Labor Relations Act and, quote, as such are afforded all statutory protections. Again, super early on this, but any inkling of what kind of domino effect this might have, what kind of ripple effect this might have?
I mean, it may be even more than name, image, and likeness. You know, again, I haven't even had a chance. Like you said, I haven't had a chance to really digest that ruling. But when I saw that, and I just thought, "Holy cow!" You know, the veil has finally been lifted altogether. When the NLRB says something like that. And, you know, from my experience as a labor rep in a previous life, that when the NLRB, you know, issues something like that, when they clarify a status of any kind of worker, I mean, it's something that sticks. And for, you know, for college sports, that's going to be huge. It's going to really change the landscape of how really how they treat sports. I mean, it might be officially the minor league that everybody says college football and college basketball become.
You know, part of me, I mean, I'm happy for players, especially on the NIL thing. Part of me looks at this and thinks, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, I think it leans to unionization. And I think that, you know, it's essentially going to change college sports as we know it. It's going to be gradual. But I think there's going to come a point where some people are kind of wishing for the good old days. And they might be the good old bad old days, because clearly players deserve what they can get with their own images. But I think this is the biggest can of worms that maybe we will see in during our professional careers.
Yeah, because the whole facade about college sports, you know, where everybody thought that the education and getting a free education was the payment, and it's not going to be that anymore. The thing about name, image, and likeness, I remember thinking that it was going to be something of a game changer. But, you know, I think we're just seeing it's more anecdotal with certain players, you know, benefiting over others. I mean, it isn't like everybody on the team is going to get something. But, you know, something like this, this really changes, again, you know, how athletes – feel about themselves is, you know, much like say when you and I graduated from high school and we wanted to work we wanted to be considered, you know, employees. I mean, you know, we knew what we had to go through. It's kind of just going to be the same thing where you look for the best opportunity, the best job, especially if you're playing for like one of the major, you know, football or basketball factories. And, you know, I'm not going to mention any one particular basketball school by name, but it's definitely going to be something where, you know, I think it really, really changes how they look at athletes, how athletes look at themselves. And you just have, now you've got to figure out, you know, how do these guys get compensated? How do you, put a program together. And like you said, be careful what you wish for.
Gary, just a couple minutes left here, but you mentioned name, image, and likeness, and I couldn't help think about the high school quarterback here in Kentucky, Gavin Wimsett, who forego his senior year of high school to join Rutgers and to sign a name, image, and likeness deal. What is the cutoff from when we should stop giving name, image, and likeness deals to kids? I mean, you have football coaches offering scholarships to eighth graders. I feel like it's dangerous if we start offering ad campaigns to 7-year-olds.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, something needs to be in place where, you know, again, wait for them to at least get to maybe their junior year in high school. But I think you have to really make them complete. Well, reclassification is one thing, but I think you really have to make sure that these guys complete their requirements. Not really skirt the rules, because I felt like when I saw that it sounded like there was a little bit of stuff going on there that I said I'd never really heard about that, just because of name, image, and likeness. It's going to get out of hand, but I think, you know, there has to be something in place, and it might be state by state, where they put some kind of limitations on you know, how young can you go after some of them? I mean, for crying out loud, let them at least get out of grade school. Well, heck, let them get to high school before you start thinking about stuff like this, because I've been to middle school games where I've seen recruiters there.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like when I worked in New York and, you know, and sometimes around the D.C. area. And I don't know. I mean, you all probably know more about this. Like, I keep thinking about that, the fable of Damon Bailey, you know, about how recruiters were showing up at his games and I guess in middle school or something.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's crazy.
Was on the cover of SI, and Bob Knight said he was the best player in America, you know, at that age. So, yeah, it is. And then there will probably try to – somebody will come forth with parameters that will end up in court, so where everything does. But maybe by then, Gary, we won't have to worry about it. But I think
we'll both be sitting at Lambeau watching games and laughing.
God willing.
Yeah.
And I like our chances against the Steelers this weekend. We'll leave it at that. Gary, thank you so much. See you in the press box Saturday, I hope.
All right. Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. That's, you know, that's a game that makes this job fun.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, man.
All right.
See
take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Gary Graves, the Associated Press Green Bay Packers fan. Back in a minute, 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Gary Graves for joining us. Kentucky, Florida coming up. You'll hear it right here. Saturday night, Tom Leach, Jeff Pecora, yours truly. Should be fun if the Wildcats, A, take care of the ball, of course. B, get off to a good start. Wildcats are playing volleyball down at Ole Miss. Set number one, they lead it 20-17 right now. Kentucky looking for its fifth consecutive SEC championship. Billy's kind of chipper today because his beloved Buccaneers have added a player I really like. Some people don't because, well, they consider him a little too loud. Billy doesn't like LeBron James for speaking out. But I'm sure he likes Richard Sherman now, don't you?
Oh, man, you're making me like all these people I used to hate. I mean, Tom Brady's one of them. Antonio Brown, Richard Sherman, Rob Gronkowski. I mean, if these guys are willing to, I'm not going to say shut up and dribble, but hey, bring your personality down a notch to win a Super Bowl, then come on and let's go ring chasing.
But if Richard Sherman's personality is what made him, at the time, maybe the best in the league, why tone it down? Are you saying tone it down now?
Well, he's got to tone it down now. He can't be the same player he was when he was with the Seattle Seahawks. He needs to adapt. He needs to be a little bit like a fine wine, Dick. He can't be screaming at his quarterback in the locker room. That's because his quarterback's now the greatest player of all time. It wasn't a rookie, Russell Wilson.
Did he do that in Seattle?
Oh, yeah.
I think I missed that.
A very confrontational person.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw him screaming when he was being interviewed, I think, by Aaron Andrews.
Aaron Andrews,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's okay.
Calling out the offense when the defense seems to be carrying the team throughout the regular season.
Yeah. He's not the first guy who's done that.
No, but he's also somebody that needs to recognize that the dynamics have changed in this locker room. And also, the Bucs have done this before. They signed aging Darrell Revis to their squad.
That didn't work out.
No, that's because Josh Freeman
Antonio
was the quarterback.
Brown?
Why did I hate Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
I mean, besides the sexual assault charges and the...
Well, that's legit.
And
I mean, the on-field stuff.
And how he acted, just with, like... You know, I like to see sports members as role models.
It was the off-the-field stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, then why Brady? Because he won too much?
Well, yeah, he cheated.
True.
And then, I mean, you just get tired of people at the top.
I don't mind the being at the top stuff. That's fine. They earn that. But, yeah, going back to that, and again, I don't care that they underinflated the football. Just don't lie.
Well,
just don't lie.
Don't smash your cell phone on the concrete to try to avoid handing it over.
Don't hide evidence. I've watched every episode of Law & Order about six times, enough to where I'm considered an attorney in certain counties of New York State. And destroying evidence, you just don't do that.
And, you know, Spygate is guilty by association
a
little bit.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's Belichick.
But, you know, I've turned it around. I got a jersey now. You know, he's won me a Super Bowl. I mean, he is the GOAT. There's no debating it.
Well, yeah, and I held out against that. I was always a Johnny Unitas was the GOAT guy, and it's hard to compare. But when he brought him back against Atlanta, that cinched it for me. I hated to say that, but, you know, I mean – if Unitas were playing now, but that's a game that's fun to play, but you just can't do that.
Then went and did it with another franchise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Exactly. Yep. More to come, 630 WLAP.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Failed to mention it was a beautiful day today, no question about that. Hoping for more Saturday when the Wildcats take on those Florida Gators, a game you'll hear right here on 630 WLAP. Back to Kentucky football in just a moment, but I don't know if you saw this, Billy, but evidently there is a book that has been published just in time for the Tampa Bay-New England game in which it claims Bill Belichick told Tom Brady Brady wanted to get together so he could say goodbye because he was going to Tampa. Belichick allegedly said, nah, let's just do it over the phone, and which he has denied. Your comment.
Sounds like Bill's a text message breakup kind of guy. That's tough. I mean, that's some of the stuff that's coming out this week, Dick, about the reasons why Tom Brady left New England was Bill Belichick's failure to evolve his relationship with Tom Brady. You know, he wasn't the same young quarterback drafted with the 199th pick. I mean, he was a Super Bowl winner. He wanted to be treated like that a little bit, and I think Bill wanted to treat him like young Tom still.
Interesting the way Belichick, yet they stayed together probably longer than they might have, but they made it work. And then my Packers go through a similar thing with Aaron Rodgers. You know, they treat him poorly. And I'm not saying, you know, you can't cut the six-string wide receiver because that's his buddy. But how in the world they keep a guy like Aaron Rodgers in the dark, how they don't confer with him the way the Patriots did with Tom Brady. Whenever when they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo, they told him, you know, don't worry about this, but we're taking it. You need a good backup quarterback. And that said, there's an article out there about the fact that the Niners, of course, drafted Trey Lance. Garoppolo made some mistakes. People immediately, oh, Trey Lance needs to start. And by the way, the Bears will destroy Justin Fields. They will ruin Justin Fields. Not because he couldn't be a good quarterback, but because there's not enough around him. He'll get destroyed. Their O-line, it's just the coaching staff, awful. I've said it before. The blueprint is the Cincinnati Bengals of many years ago, and it sounds weird to say that, but they had John Kitna, a journeyman, serviceable quarterback on a decent Bengals team. They went 8-8 that year. He enabled Carson Palmer to sit for the entire year, never got in the game, and learn. The next year, Carson Palmer was ready to go. And would have had, I think he had a solid career. I think he would have had a special career if he hadn't gotten his knee blown out in the playoffs against the Steelers. But look at Aaron Rodgers. He said sitting 3 years behind Brett Favre, he said learning the offense, learning how to be a pro, and he said getting my body ready to play in the NFL. Invaluable. But he's also said, Billy, which I think is really interesting, that he said some of the guys coming out now are better equipped to start and play right away, if not right away, but let's say in a year. He talks about Mahomes, who sat behind Alex Smith. And Mahomes said what he learned from Alex Smith is immeasurable. Having to come in, sit, learn, watch Alex Smith. And again, just like Kitna. Not great, but a pro's pro. And I guess now, you know, Garoppolo sat. Tom Brady sat. Tom Brady sat behind Drew Bledsoe.
That's right.
And only got in because of an injury to Bledsoe. Bledsoe was a fixture as a starter. Now, the argument, too, is you can't do that right now because they're paying these guys so much money up front. My response is, are you not investing in the future when you draft a quarterback like that?
Very true.
You've got to give him a chance to mature and let your investment grow. And throwing him out there right away is the dumbest thing you can do. But I'm all for it in Chicago. Nothing against Justin Fields, but long as they're not creeping up on my Packers, that's fine with me.
A couple things. Justin Fields had one designed rollout out of the pocket in the entire day versus Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, it was just terrible game script.
Yeah.
Just awful by Matt Nagy. I think he'll ruin him. Also, another guy that sat before he played was Lamar Jackson.
Great point.
Sat behind Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
Who is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but yet I don't think many think he's elite or really, you know, a great guy. So I think there is a lot of value to letting a guy sit. I mean, Johnny Manziel sat for maybe 8 games or so before he was thrusted into the spotlight.
How'd that work out?
It didn't. But, you know, when you say about an investment into the future, why not put a Ryan Fitzpatrick out there for 1 year at least? Because you're not going to win the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Just let your young quarterback kind of gel and mold into the system.
Oh,
don't throw him
tickets.
In there and expect to win 14 games.
Got
to
sell tickets.
You know, it's a little different with guys that are the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
I think those guys are expected to start immediately.
But how did it work out with the Browns? You know, Ty Detmer was supposed to mentor Tim Couch, and they're boys. They were close. It wasn't like, you know, Couch was pushing him. But the Browns panicked after they got blown out by the Steelers. Oh, my God, we got to put the kid in. And it went from bad to worse, even though Tim had a solid career for 5 years before his shoulder gave out.
They also didn't help him on the offensive line or his
receivers.
They put a terrible
team around him. Yeah.
I mean, Cam Newton found success starting right away at the first overall pick. Joe Burrow, I think, is going to find success, even though he's going to have to fight through
injury.
You
got to kind of throw him out, though, after last year. You know, and I think he would have had a disastrous first year had he not been hurt, because he was already getting crushed. How many times had he been sacked when he went down?
Yeah, but he was like, the Bengals were in all those games, though. Like, it was a completely different feeling, I feel like, at least in the franchise when he was there, when he was playing, when he was starting. It's different when guys like, I don't know, Josh Rosen is a top 15 pick and they just never pan out.
Boy, that's a great example. I mean, he tried out with, what, his fourth team?
Yeah.
And got whacked? All right, shifting back to the Wildcats, if you're just joining us, we urge you to pull up the podcast version of the show, because at the top of the broadcast, we were joined by Charles Grundy Jr., the attorney for Andrew Phillips, one of the 6 players who was accused but not indicted. And he basically educated us, or re-educated, on the purpose and the machinations of the grand jury, how that works in society today, and was specific about some of the details in the case as they pertained in general and as they pertained to his client. Mark Stoops, and we mentioned this last night when we went on the air, as we went on the air, he was talking to the media about the fact that the players had been exonerated. That story broke late in the afternoon. We have comments now from Mark Stoops. You may have seen bits and pieces of it, but this is basically the crux of what he had to say when he announced that the players were officially reinstated.
I'm going to talk briefly about the 6 players that returned were cleared to play today. The last time I touched base with you about this, I mentioned that I would let the process play out. And that has played out, and we're glad to welcome the players back to the team to be eligible to play this weekend. They did return to practice activity last Monday, so they've been at it for over a week now. And they were still not cleared to play last weekend, but we let them get back. Part of that was we knew they had a hearing coming up and wanted to get them time to get back into shape, to get the acclimatization period back under their belt. There's so many practices you've got to have in helmets and shoulder pads and so on. So we got through that process and then through the legal steps. Thank you to the grand jury for doing the due diligence, doing the work. We appreciate that. And again, we're glad to have the players back, and you know, that's all. I'd be glad to open up to questions at this point about that.
You said this whole time you were pretty confident. Where did that confidence come from in knowing those guys are here?
I just believed in the players. I really did. There are times when mean, you know that. I mean, we're going to try to always do what's right and what's best, and you know, but we're going to go with the facts. And I appreciate the university, Dr. Capiluto, Mitch Barnhart. You know, we stuck by our players because we believed in them, and we believed that at the end of this process, they'd be exonerated, and they were.
That would have been my first question. Why so confident? Because as I mentioned to Mr. Grundy, Stoops seemed very confident, and Grundy was as well. But if you're wondering why this happened, and if you're a cynic or a skeptic, and I understand that. You know, you're talking about football players in a college town. But if you look at the facts in terms of evidence, what was presented to the grand jury, what the investigators from the university found, what the police found, and I think, Billy, what was kind of disappointing was that, as Grundy told us, they didn't talk to the players. They talked to the complainants, but not to the players. So, but bottom line is, we don't know entirely how many people spoke to the grand jury, witnesses, that kind of thing. And you and I read the same articles. There are several online. And you know, you tip your cap to the mainstream media who investigated and talked to a lot of people. But a lot of them said, I don't know if I'm going to pursue this. I just want to put it behind me, which, again, is understandable.
You know, the strangest thing that stuck out to me, Dick, was when Mr. Grundy talked about how they identified who they had seen at the party.
Yeah.
Giving a football program to the witnesses and saying, who did you see? And the fact that Andrew Phillips' photo was significantly different than how he looked at the day of the party.
And, you know, it's funny he mentioned that because I remember going through the media guide preseason. I think it might have been on media day. And I kind of wanted to talk to Andrew because, you know, like I said before, I know his father a little bit. And I had met Andrew when he was literally a babe in arms, you know, being held by his father at a practice one day. You know, what was it, 17 years ago. But looking at the media guide and looking at him, I think, I may have seen him from a distance. I never got the chance to talk to him. Totally different look. No question about that. You know, and it's not a bad, I mean, if you're an investigator, that's a good place to start. But, and not to be second guessing, but that's not where you finish either, necessarily. So, like I said, thank God nobody was seriously injured. Oh, and the gun charge was tossed. That's another thing, Billy, that confused me. You had one witness saying there was a gun pointed in somebody's face. And then it was like, well, I heard that happened. Then it was, well, he thought he saw the hand grip of a gun in a guy's belt, you know. So I think a lot of that was a little too sketchy. So that charge was, I thought maybe that was the one thing that might follow them. But again, it gets down to the eyewitnesses and the evidence.
That, and it's always hard to remember a specific day. Like, Dick, if I were to ask you what you did on August 8th, 2021 at 4 p.m., unless something very significant happened, I think you'd have a hard time telling me.
Yeah, but if I were in the middle of a brawl like that.
But at a college party where you could be underage drinking involved?
No. Well, no, I'd know, to your point, I'd know if I was at that brawl on a certain Saturday night. But, like you said, there was a lot going on. There was drinking going on. There were a lot of people going on. And I'm guessing what happened quickly. So how do you conflate things in your mind? You know,
I exaggerate a lot, Dick, and I don't do that on purpose a lot of the times.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to remember that when I'm looking for witnesses to call. Talk to Billy before you put him on the stand.
I love my job, Dick. Let me tell you.
Talk to Billy before you put him on the stand. Make sure you nail down what he's saying. We had one other comment from Mark Stoops from yesterday that we didn't have a chance to get to. Oh, and we have another football game we didn't have a chance to get to that we need Billy to pick. Let's do that first. Auburn at LSU, the Tigers. Two of the three Tigers mascots in the league hook up at LSU. Favored by 3.5 LSU. Auburn hasn't won in Baton Rouge since 1999. Even with some really good teams, Auburn has not gone in there and won. And Baritelli's picking LSU.
Yeah, I'm going to as well. I think I go LSU just because of Brad Johnson's son.
Max?
Yeah, he's the quarterback, Dick.
Yeah, sure is. So apparently he's got a big arm just like that.
Ride or die with the Johnson family.
Well, and you've got, apparently, Brian Harsin, the Auburn coach, he's already fired his wide receivers coach.
Really?
How do you do that three games in? Unless the guy just stood up in front of a meeting and dressed you down. I'm talking about the assistant. Could he have done a job so horrible? And if that's the case, you're a failure as a head coach, if that's the case.
Yeah, was that a guy he had brought in with the new staff? Because if so, then...
Cornelius Williams already fired. Wow. And a little bit of a quarterback controversy at Auburn. Bo Nix on the bench. TJ Finley, who engineered that incredible comeback last week, gets the start. Bo Nix, the guy who beat out Joey Gatewood, who, by the way, a high school buddy of mine lives in Orlando, just texted me and confirmed there's a freshman starting now. Dylan Gabriel, no relation.
What happened to Gatewood?
Central Florida quarterback, broken collarbone against Louisville. So he's done.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So now there's a freshman. I think he's a redshirt freshman. Mikey Keene. Well, Steve just says he's a freshman. Will start against Navy. Joey Gatewood is the backup. He's been sent in twice to run the ball. No, in two games, he's run the ball four times for 35 yards.
Put that man in. What's going on?
Well, why couldn't he beat out a freshman? Is it because he got there late, I guess?
He doesn't know the playbook?
I guess.
Man.
Popped out. I know it would have been tough to ask him to sit for another year. Plus, if he sits and he's behind a freshman now, he ain't going to beat him out next year.
You know, Mac Jones sat for 4 years.
How about that?
And then he played one. And then what happened?
Worked out pretty well.
Won a championship.
Yep. Well, the young man starting for the Bengals now bounced around and sat. Things worked out for him. Am I correct?
That's right. Joe Burrow. Yep. He was a Georgia Bulldog at one point.
He was an Ohio State Buckeye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Long road for him.
Yep. Worked out.
That's just the new normal, I guess.
The other thing, too, is the kid starting in Alabama now has had to wait.
Yeah.
But he's already rich thanks to the NIL. Back in a minute, 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
All right, what movie does this make you think of? Blues Brothers, right?
Of course.
Gotta be.
You get my cheese whiz, boy?
Orange whip. Man. So it's one of the most quotable movies. Thanks to all our guests tonight, Charles Grundy, Gary Graves, Van Hiles. We learned a lot tonight, Billy. Not just civics, but football.
I mean, right off the bat, I learned that you can't jam a slot receiver because they're not on the line of scrimmage.
Isn't that great?
Never knew that.
And Van Hiles did not. I expected him to take up for the D-backs just on principle against Jeff Pecoro, wide receiver. They hold on every play. You know, and Van basically wants to see D-backs get away with more. But, you know, tell me another position. Tell me a tougher position in all of sports. You're running
left tackle
backwards. You're running backwards, essentially, against a guy who knows exactly where he's going. And you don't, but you have to run step for step. And then when he goes to make a play, you can only defend. You can only touch him in certain ways.
You have to look back at the ball
yeah.
coming towards you.
Yeah, in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can't hold him
yeah.
after a certain
no,
point.
No, exactly.
You think it's harder than left tackle?
Yeah. Left tackle knows what he's supposed to do, where he's supposed to go. He knows if it's a run, knows if it's a pass.
Yeah, you gotta be strong to play that position.
Well, that's
man.
True.
You gotta be a different kind of strong.
Yeah, you're not gonna line up there though unless you're strong. But you're not gonna line up a DB unless you can run, right?
That's true.
Yeah. Well,
I can't backpedal that fast, Dick.
Well, get out and practice. There's no excuse for that. That's a long hallway right behind you. Get on it, man.